It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for the Step Back and FanRag Sports. And I write for the Miami Heat's Tip Off magazine. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who's covered the Heat for SB Nation and AllYouCanHeat.com. I cover the league at large for FanSided and FanRag Sports. And you can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13. Today's show is sponsored by Draft. Use the promo code LOHEAT to get a free entry after you make your first deposit. And check out our Twitter account at LockedOnHeat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us during tonight's slate of games.
With the trade deadline just hours away, we are going to scour the league for news and rumors, including some potential Heat targets. And we're going to get to some league-wide news later on in the show. A lot of stuff happening during this deadline, not everything trade-related necessarily. But let's start here with this report by the Miami Herald's Barry Jackson that the Heat are indeed looking at Marco Bellinelli, much to David's chagrin, as a possible target to add to the wing as a trade target, potentially. Jackson reporting that the Heat is among teams that have expressed interest in the Atlanta Hawks swingman Marco Bellinelli. This is his quote, according to league sources. And he's one of a number of wing players that Miami has done due diligence on, whatever due diligence means. Also worth noting that the Hawks did sit down Bellinelli during their last game on Tuesday, apparently preparing to trade him. They are weighing several different offers, according to different reports.
This was an interesting wrinkle, right? That they actually told, look, you're going to get traded. We just don't know to who yet, so we're not playing you until we find out.
It is an interesting wrinkle. And who knew that the Hawks would be fielding offers from Marco Bellinelli, several different offers, and weighing the best one from Marco Bellinelli. Right. Who would have thought that before the season? You said something before we started recording, actually. You're like, who would have thought our first segment would have been about Marco Bellinelli going into the trade deadline? But that's where we're at. That's sort of where the Heat are at, for better or for worse, because they're just so – they just don't have many options, right? We've talked ad nauseum about how – little leeway the Heat have as far as roster construction and adding to this roster is. Bellinelli's making $6.6 million this season on an expiring deal, so he's not going to affect any – if the Heat were to hypothetically get him, or whoever gets Bellinelli, I suppose, it's not going to affect their cap going forward. If you're the Heat, that's one of the things you're looking for, right? In any sort of trade that you make and any sort of return player that you get is you know, every team going into the deadline has boxes that they want to check off on in any potential deal. And if you're the Heat, not taking on any extra salary for future seasons is probably their number one box. Their number two box is obviously getting somebody who could probably fill some minutes along the wing and score. I would say those two things, while also not getting rid of probably one of their core pieces here. And we could debate, I suppose, who those core pieces are. But as long as they're not getting rid of future assets, the little future assets that they have, making sure that they're getting back a player who can be impactful this season and help win now while not adding salary for the future, those are the three boxes I think Miami's trying to check. And Bellinelli, to a degree, does check all those boxes. Unfortunately, the Heat can't use their disabled player exception to acquire him. So that adds a little bit of a weird wrinkle to this whole potential deal. So the only way that the Heat could get Bellinelli is by trading one of the players that they already have. It doesn't make sense to trade Wade Ellington for Bellinelli. They can't the Hawks apparently want young players and draft picks. The Heat don't have draft picks. They do have a couple of young players. If you're not trading Richardson, because you can't, you're not trading Winslow, you're not trading Bam for Bellinelli. So David, the only possible trade I can come up with is Tyler Johnson for Marco Bellinelli. The Hawks would have to be willing to take on Tyler Johnson's ballooning contract for the next two seasons. I don't think it's possible. As much as I want Bellinelli on the Heat, it just doesn't seem likely. What do you think?
I have to agree. I just can't see them committing that kind of money to a guy like Tyler Johnson. And I don't know that they necessarily view him as a star player who will live up to that kind of ballooning salary for the next couple of seasons. It just doesn't seem to make sense. I've got to go back a step here, because honestly, I just cannot see the value of bringing a guy like Bellinelli on board. I know I've been pretty consistent about this, But if people are rallying against Goran Dragic playing minutes on this team and stagnating the growth or limiting the growth of younger players, having a guy like Bellinelli, albeit just for a few months as a rental, would be even a more egregious case of blocking the young players that are left on this team. I mean, I just don't see it. I just got to throw that in there.
Well, you know, I think you and I disagree with this only because if the Heat are going to make a play to maintain a playoff position, which is not a guarantee, and to make some noise in the playoffs, they rely so heavily on Wayne Ellington, specifically in the second halves of games. And if he doesn't have it going like he hasn't in the last four games, which the Heat lost all four of, if he's not shooting well, you've got to have another option. And I don't think Marco Bellinelli plays consistently on this team. But if like I said, if Ellington's just not shooting well that night, then you swap him out for Bellinelli. You just need another option. The Heat just don't have that. They rely so much on Wayne Ellington that it's an insane degree, a degree that Wayne Ellington should never be relied on. It's nothing against Wayne Ellington, but he's just a shooter. Right. And shooters shoot, and that's all Wayne Ellington does. And sometimes he doesn't shoot well, just as all shooters. You know, they have off nights, and the Heat don't have another option. And I think if you have Bellinelli, you can have him on the end of the bench for, you know, a guy that, you know, a spot that A.J. Hammonds or O'Kara White or is just taking up right now. And not O'Kara White's been injured, right? But he's not going to play even if he's healthy. There's just extra spots on that bench where I think you can use somebody.
A break glass in case of emergency kind of thing?
100%. Yeah. Break glass in case the man with the golden arm isn't working.
Now, I will say, though, that if the trade for Tyler is in the works, and that's what it takes in order to acquire Bellinelli, it's probably worth it. Just because of, unfortunately, the salary conditions that make appreciating Tyler so difficult. Yeah. Because for all that he does contribute, I just don't see him as a player who's quote unquote worth $20 million over the next couple of seasons. No. And so that's, if you can unload that deal in the process, then absolutely go for it. But I just don't
see Atlanta. The Hawks do it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, and look, his timeline.
Because he can't attach a draft pick to Tyler either. And I think maybe that would sort of maybe grease the wheels a little bit, but they can't.
I mean, he plays both guard spots. They see him as a guy who backs up Dennis Schroeder. I mean, there's a lot. I could see the interest, but not for that kind of money, which is the problem, is that Tyler's just making or will be making too much money over the next couple of seasons.
And then the Hawks won't be competitive within the next two seasons anyway, so you'd just be paying a guy to just be there, where if you're the Hawks, you'd probably prefer just a low second-round pick over Tyler Johnson, just something that you could maybe throw at an asset or something like that, or hope you get lucky in the draft.
Yeah.
The Heat are in contact, as far as other news, with Memphis about Tyreek Evans. That seems like a long shot. The Memphis wants a first-round pick. They might not get a first-round pick, but they should at least get a second-round pick, and the Heat have neither of those. That's not going to happen, right?
Yeah. I think if the connection there is simply because Chris Wallace, the Grizzlies GM, was formerly part of the Heat front office, so there's a connection there. Pat Riley has engaged in a number of trades in the past with Memphis. They dealt Chris Anderson and Mario Chalmers there a few years ago, mm-hmm. even going back to, was it 2004 when they acquired they sent Eddie Jones over there in exchange for I forget, James Posey and Jason Williams. So, I mean, there have been a number of deals between Miami and Memphis over the last, you know, 20 years of Riley's tenure. But at the same time, I just don't see them wanting anything that Miami could possibly offer for Tyreek Evans without a draft pick, which is what they want, and reasonably so. Miami just doesn't have a realistic shot. He's taking the call. Wallace is probably taking the call because of his connection to Riley, but I don't think he's actually pursuing any kind of deal with Miami.
Out of respect, yeah, that makes sense. Barrett Jackson, in the same report that we mentioned earlier, said that it would be a surprise if the Heat traded Justice Winslow for a rental, but did mention that Winslow could get lumped into a deal attached to Tyler Johnson in order to rid themselves of that Tyler Johnson contract. I still think that that's a long shot, only because I don't see what teams are willing to take on Tyler Johnson, even for Winslow, because his value is so kind of hit or miss right now. I think it varies across the league. So it would have to be like this extreme sweet spot. Like, I don't even know if it exists, where there's a team willing to take on Tyler Johnson and has a need for Tyler Johnson and is also a believer in Justice Winslow. That's just too specific of a fit. I just don't think it happens.
Yeah, it's tough to see any kind of possibility with that. And look, one thing that we've been very consistent on, Justice Winslow still represents too much potential to trade up for anything less than a superstar. And I know that sounds ludicrous to some people, maybe who follow other fan bases, but for the most part, I think you still don't know what you're getting for out of Winslow. He could take a star leap, even if that's not exactly what's projected for him at this point. But he's on such a reasonable deal, and right now he's provides such great value. He's one, like you mentioned, one of the few assets on this team that has a very, very good value because there's still potential there, and he's on such a cheap deal.
Should mention, I've got a Tyler Johnson hypothetical trade later on in the show, so wait for that. But we're not there yet. Just as far as from other targets, we'll just breeze through these here. From Barry Jackson, just sort of, I don't know if he's hearing things or whatever, but he throws these names out there in his report as ideas that would fit at least wing targets that could fit underneath that disabled player exception that the Heat could acquire a player with. Brooklyn's Joe Harris, 6'6 shooting guard, nice player, can hit some threes, plays hard on defense. Dallas's Devin Harris, as far as a point guard, I hate that idea. Orlando's Aaron Aflalo, no thanks, he hasn't been good in 10 years. Or Mario Hezonja, a little bit more intriguing as a buy-low candidate. Yeah. Or Memphis's James Ennis. We talked about Tyreek Evans before from the Grizzlies. That's probably not going to work, but maybe James Ennis can make a return to South Beach. Do any of these names just sort of jump out at you?
Joe Harris has been really good, and I've heard that his name has been included in a number of potential trade talks. Like even a team like Cleveland that could be looking for some help right away might be interested in a guy like Harris if they could get relatively cheaply. Devin Harris, absolutely not. Obviously, he's well past his prime. Aflalo, same thing. Ennis, because of his connection to Miami, is enticing and somewhat interesting. But, I think his limitations, the ones that made his trade so easy a few seasons ago, are still there. And at this point, you're not going to get much out of him. I'd rather take a chance on a guy like Hezonja, who still has some potential just because he's so damn young. Miami really liked him prior to the draft a couple of seasons ago. They actually went to Europe and scouted him despite the fact that Pat Riley has a well-known hesitation for European players. But I think Hezonja has been limited, and I wonder if maybe he just needs a fresh start and maybe Miami, with their preaching and history of developing players, might be able to take Hezonja and help him reach his full potential. There are real flashes there. They're just not consistent enough. And, for somebody who watches Orlando as often as I do, you get frustrated because you see these moments where you go, wow, that's amazing. And then he does something really boneheaded in a couple seconds later. And I think that's the overall Hezonja experience. But there's still potential there. So on a team like Miami, I could see him developing into a superstar, to be honest with you.
And in Miami's last game against the Magic, Goran Dragic shared a moment with Hezonja at the end of the game. They know each other from, I guess, some sort of play situation. From EuroCup, I guess, yeah. So maybe having Dragic there as a mentor slash leader could help. Look, if you're the Heat, I'm not saying Hezonja is going to cure all your problems, but you've got room on this roster to buy low on a candidate and see if he blows up, right? That is an option for you. And if the Heat are the perfect team to do something like that, because they don't have draft picks, because they are limited with their assets, I think Hezonja would be a great target for them. And look, if he isn't any good, don't play him. You don't need to play him. But it just doesn't sound like Orlando is expecting much out of Mario Hezonja. Maybe it takes, taking one of their bigger contracts on or something like that. I don't know necessarily what it would take to get Hezonja. But if you're the Heat, you've got to make that call and you've got to see what you could do, because I'm with you. I think you get a guy. This is a typical situation. Bad situation. Drafted too high. Was expected too much of too early. But has all the talent in the world and is still young and can still develop, and you still have him under a rookie scale deal and control of that contract, go grab that guy because it's probably just the wrong situation in Orlando, and it's been so many bad situations in Orlando for so many guys. Look at Victor Oladipo. I'm not saying Hezonja is going to blow up and be an all-star, but he could. The talent is there.
I agree. Listen, just from a comfort perspective, having Dragic on the team, that's a really good point that you made there. That connection there would really, really, really be good. And I think Orlando has just lacked that veteran presence. It's really so important for young guys, particularly European guys who are struggling with so many aspects of life. It's not just playing at the NBA level. It's, you know, what do I order from a local restaurant? How do I figure out travel? How do I talk to teammates that have, you know, have English as their first language? That's not the case for me. Although Hezonja speaks English and his English has improved since he was drafted, it's a difficult process, a difficult adjustment. And I think he's just starting to kind of figure it out, but the playing time has been weird. He's had a number of coaches during his short tenure in Orlando. And I think coming into Miami would be a great, great fit for him. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you'd be willing to take on Vucevic or maybe Biombo. That would probably be what it would take. Maybe a Whiteside deal for Biombo and Hezonja.
Now we're getting crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what we're talking about here. I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah, you know, I wonder if Orlando would be willing to take on a Tyler Johnson, especially if they move on from Elfrid Payton at the deadline. I think if you get Hezonja, he leaks out in some other deal. Maybe you move Wayne Ellington to a third team, get and send a young player back to Orlando, because Hezonja's only got one more year left on his deal. So if you're the Heat, you'll only have he's only a couple months left on his rookie deal here. So if you're the Heat, you've only got a couple of months to look at Hezonja. So maybe you ship Wayne Ellington off to another team. That team sends a player with a couple more years left on a rookie scale deal to Orlando that they can mess around with, and the Heat get a look at Hezonja for a month, but a couple months. But I don't know. It's something to look at. A trade deadline podcast would not be complete without some hypothetical trade ideas, and we're going to get to that here in a second. But first, a lot of you already play fantasy basketball or daily fantasy. And if you're one of those people, we highly suggest that you check out Draft. It's daily fantasy basketball, but it's not like the other guys that you're used to using. If you're like me, your favorite part of playing fantasy is the draft. Unfortunately, you only get to draft once in your season-long leagues, and traditional daily fantasy is dominated by pros who can game the system, and that's intimidating. That's not the case with Draft. On Draft, you play real live snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long league.
Here's how it works. It's a draft that lasts for just one night, and there's no management. You just set it and forget it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. Draft even takes care of the last-minute injuries for you. Drafts start every couple of minutes, so you can join one right now. And the best part, you play for cold, hard cash. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everybody, no matter what money limit you're looking to spend. No salary caps. You play in a real-life snake draft, just like you play with your friends in a season-long league.
Come and join our draft today. Check out our Twitter account, find the link, and you can play against us in tonight's slate of games. Or if you don't want to do that, just search for Locked On Heat in the app. To get the app, just search Draft in your app store, and then you can join a game in minutes or play right from your computer on draft.com, whatever you want.
For limited time only, all new players get a free entry into a draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use our promo code. That's LOHEAT, LOHEAT. So go to the draft, use the promo code LOHEAT, and play with us tonight for free.
We've got some league-wide and Heat news later on that we're going to get to. But first, the creme de la creme of any trade deadline preview podcast. Hypothetical trades, David. Are you ready?
Absolutely.
So I've got a few for you, as I'm sure you're not surprised, because I spend way too much time on the trade machine.
You do.
I rebuilt the Cavaliers last night, by the way, just so you know, on the trade machine.
You know, I know we'll talk about a move later on, but you know, the Charlotte Hornets just made some nice acquisition there. I wonder if there could be moving some front court players, and I know Cleveland could certainly use some help.
So you're baiting me, but we should probably talk about Miami hypothetical trades.
Let's do this.
Yeah. All right. So we've talked about Tyler Johnson a couple of different times, and you and I on this show, we've wondered if anybody would take Tyler Johnson. We've basically said that Tyler Johnson is untouchable only because nobody would take his contract. But I started really thinking about that and digging into the Tyler Johnson situation. And, you know, there's a number of people who will say no contract is untradeable. Right. You can always find something. Usually it takes draft picks to get off of a salary. But then I was thinking there's a lot of teams that have Tyler Johnson like contracts on their books, mm-hmm. just bad deals. Right. Mm-hmm. Could you just swap a bad deal for a bad deal if it makes sense for the right team? Right. Like Tyler Johnson could help a team that is on the playoff fringes, that is particularly motivated to get to the playoffs and might say, you know what, we don't care what he's making next year and the year after that. Tyler Johnson can help us right now. We need help and we need to make the playoffs. and they might have a bad contract to send back to Miami. So I've got one idea here. Miami gets, and look, I don't think Heat fans are going to be happy about this, but hear me out. The Heat gets Solomon Hill from the Pelicans in exchange for Tyler Johnson, straight up. Solomon Hill had one decent year with the Indiana Pacers, I believe, right? And then signed with the New Orleans Pelicans and has been bad ever since. And he's making about $12 million a year. But he's a 6'7", 230-pound kind of swing forward, kind of can go between the three and the four a little bit. Hits threes at a relatively decent rate. Isn't a horrible defender. He just can't really do a whole lot. But the main thing is that, look, the Pelicans are getting some backcourt help that they sorely need, that they really desperately need, especially with DeMarcus Cousins out. They need another ball handler, somebody who can create off the dribble. Tyler Johnson could do that for them. They need to make a playoff push in order to save face in front of Anthony Davis and then possibly DeMarcus Cousins, who's a free agent. Right. And for the Heat, they save $14 million over the next 2 years. And that could be enough money to re-sign somebody like Wayne Ellington.
Yeah. Listen, I think it's a great move for Miami. I actually don't mind the Solomon Hill acquisition. I wrote a piece a couple weeks ago about the Pelicans, and a lot of Pelicans folks were telling me how excited they are about his potential return at some point this season, because I know he's been bogged down by injury. So they actually see him as, if not necessarily somebody who can save the season, somebody who can definitely make a positive contribution for this team, especially, you know, that was before the DeMarcus injury, but still, I think they're pretty high on him being a factor for the Pelicans. Now, the problem with the Johnson acquisition from the New Orleans side of thing is that because they just took on Nikola Mirotic, the fact that DeMarcus Cousins is a free agent, I don't know if having Johnson's salary on the books there would impede their ability to re-sign a guy like Cousins. So I don't think they would
have answered themselves. I did look into that. Even if they – so they have an $18 million cap hold on DeMarcus Cousins. They'll have to re-sign him probably for a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
Even if they do that, they still have a little bit of room underneath the luxury tax to keep Tyler Johnson in, especially if they rid themselves of that $12 million that Solomon Hill is making next year. Right. Tyler Johnson would still fit. They'd be over the cap. And this, by the way, this is a team that's capped out, right? There is no other options of getting better. They have to re-sign DeMarcus Cousins, basically, just like they had to re-sign Drew Holiday last summer. Yeah. So adding Tyler Johnson could be a way without losing any draft picks or future assets like that, and you would still fit, you know, you'd be snug below the below that luxury tax apron, so you wouldn't have to start paying extra money to the league. So again, for the Pelicans, I think it might work. It depends if they think Tyler Johnson is a better player at a position of more need than Solomon Hill is. Considering how well Etuan Warren has been playing for them, he's been a nice player for them. They've got a couple of guys on the wings there that's been kind of nice, not necessarily great for them. Mm-hmm. Quincy Miller, right? I think he's been pretty good for them. So maybe they look at Tyler Johnson as a guy who could get better. He's a little bit younger than Solomon Hill and at a position of need. So I got another one.
All right.
By the way, that was my favorite one so far. My second favorite one, I should say. I hate this next one, but it makes sense.
Okay.
Miami gets Terrence Ferguson and Dakari Johnson and Oklahoma City's 2018 second-round pick, and the Thunder get Justice Winslow. So my reasoning around this is that the Thunder, having lost Andre Roberson, they can use another elite wing defender. Winslow fits in nicely there. They already know how to manage scoring on offense with a non-scorer on offense, slotting in there at the shooting guard. Justice Winslow could do that for them, and they can use him just like they used Roberson, setting screens, cutting to the basket, handling the ball a little bit here and there. And if you're the Heat, maybe if you want to sell on Winslow now, you get an asset in Terrence Ferguson. Maybe they were high on Ferguson, somebody who could maybe juice the offense a little bit, create off the dribble a little bit more than Winslow, potentially, even though I'm not a really big fan of Terrence Ferguson. And then you get a draft pick in return.
I don't mind this deal. I don't mind this deal. I hate to have to give up on Justice so quickly. From the Oklahoma side of things, I think they would love this. I think Winslow gives them a guy that can re-sign next season when he enters restricted free agency. I think he provides value right now. You can even trade away a guy like Roberson once he comes back from injury. So, I mean, I think having Winslow on the roster really, really does help out for their playoff pursuit this season and beyond. Dakari, he's a fine player. He's a big man who has some versatility, but he's a New York guy.
He's thrown in there for salary purposes. That's the only reason he's in there.
He's you know, he's not, he's limited. He's a big body. Yeah. I could see him kind of fitting in here, to be honest with you, playing alongside guys like Bam and Olynyk and even Whiteside. So, but Ferguson, I think, is the really interesting part here because he's a really good athlete who's a really good shooter as well. So when you lose Ellington this summer, having Ferguson on the roster for a couple seasons at a rookie salary makes a lot of sense. He's a guy who can develop in Miami as well. You know, I think with Miami's, again, proven history of developing players, a guy like Ferguson can take a star leap. You know, he'll put on weight. Bill Ferrand will get him on a strength and conditioning program where he'll put on some significant muscle. We saw it with Josh Richardson. We've seen it with other players as well. And I think he'll eventually bloom here. So that's a great deal for Miami too.
See, I still wouldn't do it only because you know that I'm still a Justice Winslow believer. Sure. And I personally am not a fan of Terrence Ferguson's game. I think he's going to be Terrence Ross basically, and that's not enough.
Isn't that somebody that Miami could kind of use though? Like we're talking about getting a Tyreek Evans.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they could use a scorer like that, a guy who's willing to put up shots, and he could be he could eventually become a plus defender. He's not at this point, but he's also a 19-year-old rookie who played in Australia. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who has potential though.
I'd take him. I wouldn't get rid of Winslow for him. Yeah. So, but what would put this trade over the top for me is if they were willing to take on Tyler Johnson, right? And there wouldn't be. They're already over the tax line. There's no way they would do it. But like hypothetically, if they were to take on Tyler Johnson, and just bring, and then you can send Kyle Singler back or something for salary purpose reasons, then I think it's a no brainer for the Heat. But there's just the Thunder are already $13 million over the tax, and that's only going to increase next year, depending on what happens with Paul George, and of course. But if he comes back, they're going to be screwed. If they do that, they'll be paying a lot of money to the league, but whatever. All right, my next trade is and my last trade. We were never going to get out of here without a Hassan Whiteside trade.
Bam.
So here we go.
There you go.
The Heat get Maurice Harkless, Ed Davis, and Yusuf Nurkic, and Portland's 2018 first-round pick, lottery protected, and the Trailblazers get Hassan Whiteside. So if you're the Heat, you're getting Mo Harkless, who's got two more years after this year on his contract, a nice 3-and-D type wing, 6'9", good length, could play next to Josh Richardson in the backcourt, kind of slot into small forward, can move Josh Richardson over to the shooting guard. Not that it really matters. They could both play both positions. Ed Davis is on an expiring contract. So he will come off the books, saving the Heat money next year. And Nurkic, who will be a restricted free agent, they could decide then whether or not they want to bring him back or not. But I don't think he's going to make as much money as people thought maybe this time last year as he would make, or maybe at the end of last season when he was so good for Portland. He's kind of had a disappointing year for the Trailblazers so far. He can't really move a whole lot defensively. He's just really a big body there. Passes well enough, doesn't have great touch around the rim. I think that would be the most shocking thing if you replaced Whiteside with Nurkic, is just how much touch maybe Whiteside had around the rim compared to somebody like Nurkic, who it's just like non-existent, but just a big body you could plug into the middle. But really, you would probably just at that point move Bam and Olynyk into your starting front court. Nurkic comes off the bench for you, and then you could decide this year when he's a restricted free agent whether or not you want to bring him back. Probably not. So the Heat would be saving $13 million next season in this deal, and of course getting a first-round pick from Portland that might fall, if they make the playoffs, would convey this summer. What do you think?
It's a fine deal. I think it slants heavily in Miami's favor. While they're giving up the best player in the package, the giving up of the first-round pick is a tough one for Portland because of their salary cap situation. And so basically, look, Ed Davis – he's been very good for Portland this year. They really like what he provides there, so he's not a bad player. Harkless, you know, he had a good season a couple of years ago, got paid, and hasn't lived up to that deal. Nurkic, I'm sure they'd be happy to move. I saw some play recently from him where he actually isn't that bad around the basket. I know you probably watched Portland more than I have. I saw some nice moves from him. I mean, there could be
just
flashes. Yeah, sure. I'll give you that. And Whiteside, though, for them, they're basically committing to that team. And I'm not sure that Portland's front office or Terry Stotts sees Whiteside and goes, this is our big three with McCollum and Lillard. And now that might work.
That's a good point.
I mean, it might work. I mean, you figure with two ball handling shot creators and shooters like McCollum and Lillard, there could be a lot of lobs at the basket, a lot more open offense there with a guy like Whiteside who can finish around the rim a lot better than Nurkic or Mason Plumlee when he was there a couple of seasons ago. So, I mean, there's potential there. I just don't know that they see him and go, this is our big three that we're willing to pay 100+ million to over the next couple of seasons, and that we're going to try and compete against the Houston Rockets and Golden State Warriors. So that's the challenge.
So I agree with everything you're saying. I had an alternative deal for this, maybe to grease the wheels a little bit for Portland. And by the way, and you make all the right points, it depends on what they think of Whiteside, right? Yeah. And that's really going to be the case of any trade with any player. But Portland was one of those teams, along with Dallas, that was interested in Whiteside when he was a free agent a couple of years ago. And depending on what Damian Lillard told ownership the other day when he had a meeting with them, maybe they are willing to just say, look, let's just go all in. We'll get rid of a draft pick. We'll get rid of a nice young player that we like in Ed Davis and Mo Harkless in order to get somebody like Whiteside, because we got to make a move now. And Whiteside would solve a lot of issues for us. But here's the alternative trade to sort of grease the wheels in Portland's favor.
Right.
Miami gets Myers Leonard.
Oof.
So they're willing to take on that bad deal from Portland. Nurkic and Vince Carter's expiring contract, which they would buy out.
God.
They would buy that out, as well as Portland's 2018 first-round pick and Sacramento's second-round pick. Portland gets Whiteside. Sacramento gets Mo Harkless. Sacramento has been interested in Harkless for a couple of years now. He would solve a lot of problems for Sacramento, and Sacramento has a lot of issues, but one of their issues is that they have not had an actual small forward in maybe three or four seasons. Harkless could play small forward for them. That would be good for them and open up a lot of interesting lineups for them to sort of start developing their young guys in positions that they actually would be playing in the future for them, hopefully. Portland gets Whiteside just as last time, but they also get off of that Myers-Leonard contract. So if they are – and if you're the Heat, look, Nurkic and Vince Carter are expiring contracts, right? So you get – you'd probably buy out Vince Carter immediately, and he would go to Toronto because they're fun, and that would be a great story. Nurkic you could determine at the end of the year, but you probably let him walk. Myers-Leonard is not a great salary, but he's making anywhere between $13 and $14 million less than Whiteside. So you're saving a lot of money at that point and opening up some money between – where the Heat are still would be capped out, but between being capped out and the luxury apron, you'd have some room to maybe re-sign Wayne Ellington before entering that luxury tax next year. So, and of course, you get a 2018 pick from Portland and a second round pick from Sacramento in exchange for getting Harkless. What do you think about that?
I think this is a much better trade. I think this is one that they'd be willing to make. I think getting rid of Leonard's contract makes it a little bit more enticing, and they can still keep Ed Davis on there to play alongside Whiteside. It might have been too much to give up there if you include Ed Davis and Nurkic there. So, look, they're not going to re-sign Nurkic, or they're not going to pay him a lot of money as far as Miami is concerned, so it makes a lot of sense. Buying out Vince Carter makes it a pretty good deal. They get a couple draft picks, which they don't have. That could be part of one deal. Maybe they could package those picks together for another deal at some point, you know?
Boom.
So this could be the first of many different trades there, but I think it's great for all sides. Sacramento gets a young player, another guy who fits their timeline a lot better. Portland gets Whiteside, who can contribute right away, and they unloaded Myers Leonard. And look, Leonard is another contract who's not – it's not great, but it also fits within that same $10 to $12 million range as Olynyk and Deion and James Johnson, another guy on the books for that kind of money. And there's still potential. He's young enough – where you think maybe he might be able to take another leap here in Miami because it's Miami. They'll get him into much better shape. He can shoot to three. I actually really like this deal, to be honest with you. I'm glad you proposed it because this is a really interesting move. I don't know if anybody would be willing to do this, but at the same time, I think it's a great idea.
Well, we'll put it out in the universe and maybe it'll happen.
Yep.
We've got another trade that actually happened that we're going to talk about, not including the Heat, but and the Clippers are making moves. But first, a quick reminder to make sure you are subscribed to Locked On Heat. You can find us on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, as well as on Spotify, which is my new favorite way to listen to all podcasts.
Subscribing is the best way to support the show, as well as on our Patreon page. Another great way to support the show is to leave us a review on iTunes. It increases our ranking and helps other Heat fans discover the show.
Also, be sure to check out the rest of what the Locked On Podcast Network has to offer, including shows for every NBA and NFL team. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Okay, so some NBA and Heat news. Let's just sort of whip around the league here, David, and just get to everything. The Clippers have agreed on a 3-year extension with Lou Williams. Are you surprised by that?
Yes, because, you know, Lou was one of those guys that the Clippers had been supposedly shopping around. A team like the Rockets maybe could have used his offense again. Cleveland was another one of those teams that was ranked listed there as a potential suitor. Toronto even, you know, obviously none of those deals became finalized. And the fact that they re-signed him there, I guess they're in full rebuild mode. But at the same time, having a guy like that might be more enticing for any veterans that they could lure in free agents, in free agency. Somebody who provides offense, a guy that a lot of players around the league want to play with because of his just camaraderie, overall locker room presence, and the fact that he's a great scorer. And he seems to have taken a leap in Los Angeles that maybe a lot of people around the league didn't expect. So that's a good move for them. I don't know what the numbers indicate. Do you know what the contract the details are? Because I'm not familiar.
No. Because we just saw this news right before we started recording. So I actually haven't had a chance to go look at it. But it makes sense for me if you're the Clippers only because, all right, you need somebody who could score on offense, and they don't have that. And just regardless of if they're tanking or what, maybe they still decide to move on from DeAndre Jordan here. You still just need a guy to just do stuff. And Lou Williams is, if anything, the guy who can do stuff. And it makes sense. Like you're not going to get the return you want for Lou Williams on a 2-month rental. You're just not. And obviously they determined that, right? They've shopped him around according to reports, and they just didn't like the return they were getting. They say, you know what? We'd rather keep him here. Let him sort of lead the offense here for the next 2 or 3 years. And we can always trade him later. I mean, they just re-signed Blake Griffin this summer and traded him just months later. So they can always trade him later on, but at least you lock him in. You sort of have some sort of direction, and whatever young players you end up getting, whatever you sort of start doing with these assets that you're accumulating, you at least have a guy to run your offense, right? And just score points and sell tickets, which is ultimately what the Clippers need to be doing anyway, especially under Steve Ballmer's ownership. They want to do something. Lou Williams is exciting. Fans like him. So it makes sense to me. The Knicks get Willie Hernan Gomez, and the Charlotte Hornets get Johnny O'Brien and 2 second-round picks. This is one of the trades that are coming down before the trade deadline. Not a lot of big names here, but an interesting move nonetheless. If you're the Knicks, you're moving on from a guy who had a nice rookie season but hasn't done much for you lately because mostly you've buried him on your depth chart behind Kristaps Porzingis, Enes Kanter, and Kyle O'Quinn. Rightfully so. Those are all better players. So the Knicks move on from Hernan Gomez. They get Johnny O'Brien, I guess, for salary filler. Decent player for Charlotte, I guess. Just an athletic body, so sort of an interesting prospect. But really what you're getting if you're the Knicks, 2 second-round draft picks for Willie Hernan Gomez. Not a bad return, and not a bad player to get if you're Charlotte, who has a need for Willie Hernan Gomez, I think.
I'm gonna hesitate to say my piece on it because I think the next news bulletin point ties into my feelings about the trade.
All right, well, let's get to it. Kristaps Porzingis, unfortunately, has torn his ACL, is likely out for the season after going up for a dunk Tuesday night, making the dunk, and then coming down awkwardly and just looked like his knee snapped. Just, man, that sucks, dude. It's just like a horrible thing to see there. You don't want to see Porzingis out, but with an ACL tear, he's probably out for the season. You just hope that he bounces back fully.
I think you have to start getting concerned about Kristaps' longevity. He might just be one of those cases that is a cautionary tale. I just think, you know, he's been in the league, 4 years now? And you haven't been able to see him consistently out there for a long period of time. I mean, the unicorn might be broken. And I think that's a realistic possibility, unfortunately, for Knicks fans, is that a guy his size, you know, for all of his mobility and his length and everything else, I mean, there are such great facets and aspects to have, you know, for his offensive development. I think he's just too frail. He's too long. And unfortunately, I don't think his body can hold up over the course of an 82-game season. And I just worry that this is the future of the Knicks organization is tied into a player who's never going to be healthy. And so trading away Hernan Gomez then, you know, to go back to the previous point, I'm a little confused because, look, obviously he's not getting much playing time there, but you figure this move comes right after the news that Porzingis is done for the season, basically. Why not keep him, increase his value? You're not playing for anything this year. Play him over O'Quinn, trade O'Quinn, do whatever it is you have to do. But you play Hernan Gomez, increase his value significantly, and then you can trade him for something of value over the summer. It's not like it really matters. All Hernan Gomez wants to do is get some playing time. And then from the Charlotte perspective, he's not going to get any playing time there either. They have already got Dwight Howard, unless he's being moved. They've already got Cody Zeller. They've got Frank Kaminsky. They don't need Hernan Gomez. So it's a confusing trade from both teams. I'm not sure exactly what the hell was going on there. I thought the Knicks had moved away from what's his name and Phil Jackson, and I thought that they were making some better moves of late, but unfortunately that doesn't seem to be the case.
Yeah, I think the Hornets, maybe this signals another move is to come for them. Maybe they are able to get off of a Marvin Williams contract and you sort of replace those minutes with Hernan Gomez there. But and Charlotte just seems to have a fetish for these sort of guys anyway. So I guess maybe from that perspective they like him. But yeah. If you make an interesting point with Porzingis, is he like this generation's Bill Walton? Look, the guy's already an all-star caliber player. The Knicks are sort of moving in a direction where they're rebuilding, obviously, in the post-Carmelo Anthony world that they are currently living in. But do you push all these chips in? Do you push these second-round picks that you just acquired in? Do you push in a guy like Frank Ntilikina? Do you and push these chips into the center of the table to get guys who are good right now? And do you try to win now because you don't know how open or how long Porzingis' window is going to be open just because of his longevity questions? It's an interesting thing that you have to ask yourself if you're the Knicks. Moving on, we've talked about discontent in Washington, specifically with John Wall and the rest of his team in that organization. We've talked about that in the past. Wall recently appeared on SportsCenter, said he was surprised by the comments that his teammates made about ball movement. We read those comments in an earlier podcast. But basically, the Wizards are playing really well without John Wall. They love the ball movement. Marcin Gortat came out and said some things that he's sort of backtracked and said, like, look, this is not a slight against John Wall. Bradley Beal is saying the same thing. Like, none of this was a slight on John Wall. We just feel like we're playing well right now. But we're obviously a better team when John Wall is out there. So the players for the Wizards kind of backtracking a little bit. We don't know what they really meant when they first said those comments. But still, John Wall is reading into these comments. That's what he said on SportsCenter. He was surprised to read these things. I just don't know that the communication is there between the organization and John Wall. If I'm the Heat, and the reason I wanted to bring this up, if I'm the Heat, John Wall is a guy on my radar as a possible guy who might ask to get moved from his team over the summer. He can't get traded this year. He's not an option for the trade deadline. He can't get traded until the end of this season. But this summer, if you're Miami, I think maybe this trade deadline, depending on what happens here, is making a move that sets you up to make a John Wall trade over the summer. I think it's something they have to at least think about.
It is. And I wonder, though, this kind of him going into public. John Wall has been such an interesting character throughout his career. He's a guy who was probably much maligned early on, has kind of shifted the narrative a little bit back into his favor. And now these recent comments kind of question whether or not his head's in the right place. And I know that's a rash judgment, perhaps, for a guy like Wall, who's a very, very, very good player in this league, an all-star, obviously. But I don't know if Miami sees him as a worthy investment just because of these off the court comments. Like, that's, you don't need to be this kind of a distraction off the court for all the wrong reasons. It doesn't strike me as fitting into what the Heat consider to be their culture. Now, they may take a chance and say, you know what, once he comes into Miami, it's going to be a completely different situation. He'll find a way to thrive here, et cetera. And they might be willing to take that chance. This whole back and forth between his player, his teammates, and everything else, it's so weird. I was there when the Wizards were in Orlando a couple days ago. To a man, they all spoke highly about John and recognized that John is a superstar player, a guy who brings a lot to the Wizards organization, et cetera. But they also recognized that they all needed to step up in his absence. Scott Brooks spoke so highly of John Wall, it's not even funny. He was like, look, I don't know, all these comments that are coming on to media, it to think that, you know, John doesn't make our team better is ridiculous. You know, he was saying all these kinds of really, really, you know, he was praising his point guard player. So to see Wall kind of respond to these on ESPN or whatever is kind of bizarre. I could see Miami's perspective as far as, you know, this is your best, another best opportunity, perhaps, mm-hmm. to bring in a potential superstar player the way Kyrie Irving was last year. I just don't know. I don't know if Washington really sees the need to trade Wall just based on the fact that they've, you know, played well in his absence over the last couple of games. We'll see. You know, he's going to be out for a few more weeks, another month and a half at least, right? So I think things will probably regress to the mean a little bit, and we'll probably see this team in desperate need of a guy like Wall to bounce back. And if he's able to bounce back and they're able to go far in the playoffs with him there, I think that kind of changes things back to the way that they were earlier this season.
I'm with you. You know, you don't want to read too much into these comments and stuff, but it's been a year or so. It's been quite a while that Wall hasn't seemed happy with Washington. I just wonder if it's who is more to blame, that organization or John Wall, you know? And I wonder if you're Wall, you're locked into a deal that is paying you under market. You know what I mean? Like below market value. He's only making $19 to $20 million a year for the rest of this contract that he's locked into. So if you're the Heat, that's another reason why you would move on him, because he's only making a couple million dollars more than Goran Dragic at this point. So and he's a much better player than Goran Dragic. So that's one reason. And if you're Wall, look, you're not getting, we know that he's not happy with the marketing aspects of playing in Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah.
Miami changes a lot of that for you, and whatever money he's giving up by playing on that sort of contract, he could make up in Miami. He could decide that he could make that up in Miami. I'm not saying he can or can't, but that might be another reason why if you're John Wall, you demand to get traded. And if that's the case, I think that he'd have to look. Regardless, they'd have to look at him. Let's just wrap this up here. Rodney Magruder, according to Barry Jackson, expected back this season. Obviously, he can help. We talked about that in our last mailbag on Monday. And now for the Heat, who play the Rockets tonight. Magruder is obviously out along with Deion Waiters, Okero White. No surprises there, but Kelly Olynyk, who hurt his shoulder in Miami's last game, is doubtful to play against Houston. Wayne Ellington with a right shoulder strain is questionable, and Justice Winslow with an illness is also questionable. Maybe that right shoulder strain with Ellington it could be a reason why he's been struggling from three-point range. Maybe he's been dealing with that for a little bit, and they finally decided to sit him. Maybe determining that, look, we've got no chance against the Rockets anyway. Let's just sit our guys and get them healthy before the All-Star break starts coming up. Or I'm just going to throw this out there. Maybe this is a Marco Bellinelli situation. I don't know. So, but that's where we're at right now going into this game against Houston.
Interesting. You think you're shutting Ellington down so that they could shop him around? I don't know.
I'm recklessly speculating. I probably shouldn't have said that.
yeah, I don't know. I don't see it, but at the same time, you know, I've been surprised before. So I at this point, I should just keep my mind open to any and all possibilities, because anything could happen, especially with a trade deadline. Like, it was a very interesting perspective. I can't remember what I was listening to. I want to say it was the recent Low Post podcast with him and Adrian Wojnarowski, and you know, they talked about the actual aspect of the trade deadline, and that, you know, it's been moved up a week. Last year was a week later. It took place right during the All-Star break, if I'm not mistaken. But no matter at what point of time it is, you're going to see the flurry of moves right as the deadline approaches. Like, if you're – and Ian Wojnarowski made this point. Like, if you have a homework assignment that was supposed to be due on Saturday, and then now all of a sudden you realize it's due on Wednesday, you're still not going to start it until the day before. So I think over the next day, you know, obviously we're recording this on a Wednesday, so we've got about a day and a half left of the trade before the trade deadline strikes. You're going to see a lot more activity, and I wonder how much is actually going to take place. I still can't get a sense – of where Miami is going to be. Like, are they going to make a huge move? Are they going to make no moves whatsoever? Do they still see this season as a worthy investment, or are they looking to beyond this season? So there's so many different possibilities and potential aspects to this that I don't get a sense for where Miami is, because I don't know that Miami's in a clear favorite destination one way or the other. Are they a legitimate playoff team this year? Probably, but they're not very good. Are they better suited for next season? Yeah, but I mean, if that was the case, they wouldn't have made all the moves that they did in the summer. So I'm not sure exactly what to make of it.
It really depends, you know, on what Pat Riley thinks of this team. Maybe now I think there was a bit of emotion that, and we don't like to put emotion and Pat Riley in the same sentence. Yeah. But I think there was a bit of emotion on Pat Riley's spot. And by the way, that's a mistake. Pat Riley is famously an emotional guy, but we think of him as this like godfather mercenary guy who just makes roster moves just extremely objectively. I don't think that's ever been the case, but I think there was some emotion in bringing back this team based on that 30-11 finish and just wanting to play together. And we've talked about it. This team just wanted to play more basketball together, and they acted accordingly. Yeah. And if you're the Heat, you've got to look at a guy like James Johnson, who's not playing up to his salary. You've got to look at a guy like Tyler Johnson, who you love as a story and is just represents everything that is great about Heat culture, but is making too much money in the next 2 years. You've got to look at guys like this. You've got to look at a guy like Wayne Ellington, who this team moved mountains just to re-sign, but realize we might not be able to move those same mountains this summer. So we got to get something in for him or in return, and maybe look at the long view, because this team isn't good enough. It's just not. And good enough for whatever, I don't know, but they're not good enough. They're not. And I think you've got to take the long view, and I really hope that the Heat do that as this trade deadline approaches. But we'll see how it shakes out. By the way, you mentioned Lou Williams' contract. I looked it up. It's $8.5 million per year based on some of these reports. So we'll see if how accurate that is. But that if they got Lou Williams at $8.5 million,
so that's like
that's
three
a good
for
deal.
26 or 25 and a half, more or less.
It's like $30 million. I think they meet that probably that $8.5 million probably goes up. It was reported for 3 years, $30 million. Yeah. Thank you to Draft. Use the promo code LO Heat and get a free entry after you make your first deposit. Check out our Twitter account at Locked On Heat for instructions on how to join our league and play against us in tonight's slate of games. We will be back tomorrow. We'll figure out how we're going to do that with the trade deadline, but we will have a post trade deadline podcast at some point. But that's all we have for today. Thank you for listening and for subscribing. You can send mailbag questions and ask about advertising by sending an email to lockedonheat@gmail.com. Tweet your questions and comments for our recaps using the hashtag AskLOHeat. Music is courtesy of Mojave Wild. We'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.